the freaking bear.
Welcome to Double Dodge. This is episode 15, and we're calling this one Falcor the Luck Dragon. And I think you're going to have to listen to the outro and credits to actually understand what we're going on about there. With me, I have my very good friend, Dave. Dave, how you going, mate?
Hello, Campbell. It's good to know that we're still friends. I feel that's important.
I'm very good. I even put a very good in there in front of friends.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'm very grateful. Thank you. I'm happy to be here as well.
Yeah, no, this is good. This is good. Look, we're not here to fuck spiders, so let's work out what we're actually on about. We've got a pretty interesting one, actually. We've got a very good friend, Jared McGraw. He's our perennial sparring partner, to chat about the US meta. He's had a bit of experience in how to get knacked. And we also have another good friend, Tobias Ford, on the chat this time.
So it's a pretty long one. We chat to Jared first, and then we chat to Tobias, and it's the same phone call. And yes, we cover fucking everything. We talk about US tournaments that Jared's played in. You know, his general thoughts about stuff. Tobias about meta building, etiquette, tie breaks. It ranges the whole gamut. Somebody is sure to be triggered.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We try to be fair and balanced. That's why we thought, you know, Jared on the line, he's from the US meta. He's had actually a decent amount of experience, and I saw today he got selected in one of the WTC sides for the US, I believe the white team. So yeah. Good luck to him there.
Congratulations, Jared. You legend.
He is a champ. We love the guy. Love playing against him. So that was a pretty good conversation. We don't quite delve into his Snapchat obsession, but I'm sure we can get there next time we call him.
We touch on Tinder, and so did he.
Ah, yeah. Well, I think we should leave that there.
Indeed.
Mm.
Let's just move on from this awkward silence, shall we?
I think so. Maybe it's a good time to get into it then. So this evening we've got on the line, not one, we've gone for a double down kind of episode. We've got two guests. We have one, Jared McGraw, all the way from the US. Jared, how are you, sir?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Very good, very good. And the other special guest we've got is Tobias from Queensland. Tobias, the engineer's legend. Tobias, how are you going, champ?
Good, thank you. I'm about as excited as 1,000 big Kevs.
So if you Google big Kev, you'll have any idea what we're talking about here.
It's a Jared's classic Aussie joke.
That's great.
So
we've got three questions. We're going to ask them in general, and you can each answer them. Three questions. First question is, what is your season 3 negative play experience?
People that drop out of tournaments.
fair.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that, Jared. It's, I mean, you must
it
have
wasn't
some...
me. That probably helps clarify things. Oh, God.
And Tobias, what is your season 3 negative play experience?
Jared McGraw.
Oh, man.
I'm sure a few people feel that way.
Let me just clarify that. My season 3 negative play experience is not Jared McGraw. It is actually just playing with Brewers. So.
Well, there you go.
Which is similar and related, but quite different.
Do you have them on the paint table?
No, they're on the painting table. But I've got this really annoying thing with my Brewers, right? Because anyone who knows me will know that I am a massive Baratheon fan. And I have this dream of turning Tapper into Robert Baratheon at the Battle of the Trident.
All right.
And I'm having the most ridiculous trouble trying to find a bloody Warhammer that will fit nicely instead of his, you know, sling staff or whatever it is he's got. And so he's sitting there primed and ready to go, but I just need to find this hammer to top off the end of his staff, and then he'll be full guns ahead. And he's even going to have, you know, a bunch of rubies decking out his base. So it's
going to
be really exciting. So,
yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Sounds like a metaphor.
I got a half mast.
Anyway.
Which leads me to question number 2.
God.
I've been watching a lot of videos on YouTube, freak out compilations, people just like wigging out in public. It's amazing. I love that shit. So my question is, what is the biggest freak out you have ever witnessed?
Jared, I'll let you go first.
This is tough. I saw a lady throw her baby at a, let's see, it was at a JCPenney's. It's like a retail store, because she was caught stealing and she was trying to get away from the scene. So she threw her DNA at the guy that was trying to make sure she didn't get away with the merchandise. So she kept the merchandise and threw the baby at the person that was trying to tell her to stop.
That is amazing.
All right. Your turn.
So, scary at the same time.
Jared?
Yes.
Before I answer, I have two follow-on questions for you.
Okay.
The first is, isn't JCPenney supposed to be one of the upmarket stores in America?
It was until that moment.
Okay. And my second is, did the bathwater hit the guy chasing her?
I don't know what that means, but I'll just say sure. Oh, God. I don't want anyone to think that's what America is, by the way. I just want to clarify that. That is a unique circumstance. So, you know, somebody asked me what the worst one was. That was the worst one. So, there you go.
Clearly, your story is not true, because the security guard wasn't firing a gun at her while trying to chase the
Good. Well, this was 10 years ago before it got extremely out of hand, so, you know.
Tobias, you're a veteran of retail trade.
I don't think I can match that. However, my story is going to be somewhat more pleasant, in that the biggest wig out I've ever seen is my new puppy, Luna, who just sometimes randomly goes schizo. And it's kind of annoying, but adorable at the same time. So,
well,
that's my answer.
I like that covers the breadth of human emotion. It's good. We've got a full representation of the spectrum there. And speaking of the spectrum, my third question is, what have you got to say to Alex Botts?
Jared?
Hey, I think Alex is a nice guy. Like, I'm one of these few people that's... I've met them in person, and you know, I've enjoyed the conversation. And you know, I think a lot of people get caught up on the tiebreaker stuff. But you know, all the guys from Strictly the Worst are, you know, pleasant to talk to in person. So.
Oh my God.
We're gonna have to cut all that
out. Disappointed.
We can't possibly put that in an episode.
I'm glad to hear some balance. I think it's important, you know, that we humanize Alex. We spend a lot of time dehumanizing him. It's nice to do something.
I'm never invited back, am I?
No, man. No. You speak your truth. You speak your truth. I respect that. Right. Tobias?
Well, actually, since the first time I was on your show and I had no idea who this person was, I've actually done a little bit of research, and now I still don't really have much of an idea who he is. He's one of the co-hosts, but I'm not sure which. The only one I really know is Jordan, who is actually a very nice person. So.
Well, this is wonderful. This is a real exercise in community building, which I think is kind of what we're talking about tonight in some ways. So I feel that's a fitting end to the quick fire question round, and I want to thank you both for playing.
Well, thank you. Happy Easter.
Thank you.
Mm.
For 500 points, who is Alex Potts?
We know he's real, and we know he holds conversation and is quite a nice guy. So, yeah. Cam, what have we got?
Going to kick off with some Jared action. We've been sparring with Jared for, well, I don't know, probably 6 months or so now on Vassal, on and off. And Jared's gone to a few of the kind of major tournaments or lead-in kind of qualifiers in the US. So I guess we wanted to get a little bit of a recap, not necessarily a game-by-game, but maybe a tournament-by-tournament of how he kind of sees the US meta and how that's developing, and I guess his experience.
Yeah, I can talk about that a bit. This is my first tabletop war game, and especially first one that I've played competitively. So, you know, I kind of started out just playing locally like most people would and learning the game, and decided, well, I kind of wanted to branch out a bit because I found myself, you know, kind of getting bored with the local scene. So I'm fortunate enough to live a couple hours from Washington, D.C., which has a pretty good meta that most people would recognize as like Guild Ball Tonight and Bill Anderson and a lot of the guys. So at first, you know, started traveling up there for tournaments, maybe like 16 men or whatever. And just kind of playing once a month, something like that. And then, you know, season three came along and they came up with this idea for qualifiers for the United States. I guess because there's so many players and they were just trying to find a way to fix a format that would be maybe, I hate to say it, fair. That's not going to go over well. but to give more people an opportunity to play in the national championship because, you know, it's just so spread out. And, I mean, there are a lot of really good metas. And, you know, I know that from just traveling the East Coast and the Midwest a little bit. So I decided that I wanted to try to qualify for Adepticon, which was, you know, a regional championship. They have like, and the way the United States is set up is they have these regional qualifiers that lead into the championship. And then the regional championship leads into the nationals. So there's five regional championships that I'm aware of. There's one on the East Coast at Northern Virginia near D.C. There's one, it's an Adepticon in Chicago. There was the Las Vegas Open. And there's one, I believe it's in Texas. It's called like the Muzon Minis maybe. And then there's a Canadian one too. It's don't ask. I don't understand why that's one, but it is. So anyways, I decided, okay, well, I'm going to try to get a qualifier because if I'm going to go to a convention like this, I don't have much of an interest in anything besides Guild Ball. So I went ahead and attempted the Bourbon Trail Open, which was a nice tournament. It had, I think it was like 39 people. It was hosted at a brewery. So that's always a win-win, you know. So I get there. It's kind of like, it was a small town. It was hard to find. But when I got there, it was a pleasant experience. I got to meet a lot of the Strictly the Worst guys. I'd met them once before at the Fall Brawl last year up in D.C. It was a pretty large tournament for the U.S. But I didn't really get a chance to chat with them much. It was just kind of watch them play in person. And so, you know, I got to know them a little better. Went through the tournament. It was five rounds. I ended up winning my first four rounds playing Alchemist. And then got into the mirror match into Jordan and discovered maybe I should pay more attention to some of the abilities that aren't used quite often. Like, for instance, Compound using Chemical Resist to be able to set up Midas to ignore the first fire or poison that he's in contact with, which allows you to go past an AoE that is sitting on the ground, which is a common tactic now for somebody to take advantage of a fire AoE to decrease movement. And I never really considered that before. When I looked at Compound, I thought, wow, this is a real piece of shit ability. It's not something I'm like, who cares, right? But I think the crazy thing about this season, where it's more of a football aspect, is abilities like that are starting to come into fruition. And, you know, he definitely opened my eyes to some different tactics and stuff. He beat me. It was pretty bad, 12-2. I kind of went out of my way to get back into the game and left Midas within threat range of Vitriol, and he ended up scoring three goals. But I was able to kill Midas, which is kind of like a bucket list opportunity that maybe some people would really like to take advantage of, you know? A lot of people
hate Midas. Dave loves killing Midas.
Yeah, so that was a plus.
At least you went 12-2, mate. Like, Dano calls that getting the ball past the ladies, like, as a golfing metaphor.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes. I definitely wasn't playing for tiebreakers there. Afterwards, you know, I talked to Jordan a bit, and, you know, we just discussed strategies. He was nice enough to buy me a drink. And the cool thing was, at the bar, they had all these drinks that were, like, And some people might have seen some of the Facebook posts or whatever, but they were all like legendary heroic plays. So like there was a rigor mortis drink. You know, there was another drink. It had to do with, I can't remember all the names, but it was kind of a themed deal. And I thought that was kind of cool for the establishment to go out of their way to make it kind of a themed event. Mm-hmm. And the prizes there were spectacular. They had chibi pins. They had, the chibi cards. They gave out a hunter's team. So it was like, I guess since it was a sanctioned event that had over 32 people, it was amazing.
And was that the one where everyone walked away with two veteran spigot statues?
No, that was the Las Vegas Open. And I wanted to discuss that a bit because I'm a little pissed off I didn't get a statue at Adepticon, but whatever.
No, I hear you, man. I won a tournament list.
You know, I mean, what the hell? But anyways, yeah, it was a good experience. But unfortunately, I didn't qualify because of tiebreakers. I think I dropped to like 6th or 7th because of the 12-2. It was pretty pretty ugly. Even though it was a 5-round tournament going 4-1, I went from playing at the top table to like 6th or 7th. But I don't necessarily care about those things. I'm in the department I want to win.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not there for 2nd or 3rd and never have given a damn. So anyways, I didn't qualify. So it was about a 5-6 hour trip, but it was a pleasant experience. I'll totally go again next year. And then the following week, there was a last minute qualifier because I hadn't really attempted any of these regional qualifiers. There had been like 3 or 4 others, and they were just kind of out of my range, pretty much because this is Central America, Chicago, and I'm East Coast. I'm not really too crazy about traveling. I don't want to do like a 10 or 11 hour for a qualifier. But this one was up in Pennsylvania. Not too bad for me. It was like about 4 hours. So I go up there, 16-man tournament. I decide I'm going to play Morticians. Brain Pan and Memory had been out for a week, and I tried a few Vassal games. I just kind of wanted to mess around a bit. I knew that there was some good players there, but it wasn't like anything like the Bourbon Trail Open. And I actually did really well. It was a 4-round event. I went 3-0 again, got to the final table. I went up against Dutch, who's a good player. That he used to play Brewers. Now he's playing Alchemist. And I made a few mistakes that game, and he got some witness me off into Morticians, which now this season, the Morticians, one of their negatives is their health isn't what it used to be. Like a couple people got what you would call, I guess, a nerf. To where they would be more vulnerable to a witness me opportunity. Because I know on an average he can probably do 12 damage off the charge and 2 attacks in the most models with the right setup. And then also that would be 6 damage to anyone that's within 3 inches off those witness me. So, or I'm sorry, intensifies. So it was a good experience once again. I got snake bit. I didn't get the I had to win really to qualify there because there was nobody like Jordan around that had already qualified. It wasn't about finishing in the top 2 or 3. I had to win that one. So that was unfortunate. Made it to a final table again. Lost again. Dropped to whatever. Who cares?
Always so the like, bridesmaid.
Yeah. Which is, maybe that should be my negative play experience, but I don't consider it a negative play experience. Like, to me, it motivates me to continue to try to get better because here's the thing with Jordan, right? Like he's kicking everybody's ass. He's not losing. He's playing different teams and beating people. And if anybody wants to make it out of the U.S., they're going to have to beat him at some point. And who gives a damn about 2nd or 3rd? And I'll explain to you why I feel that way when I get to Adepticon. So anyways, the following week's Adepticon, and yes, I'm a madman that decided to do 3 tournaments, 3 straight weekends. The benefits of being single.
Man. Brilliant.
So anyways, I'm like, I'm going to go to Adepticon. Haven't really been to Chicago before. I had to get a last-minute flight out there. I was able to get off work, which was a good thing. Make the trip out there. I wasn't pre-qualified or I didn't register. So I show up, get my badge, whatever, get on a waiting list, just kind of hang out. I've heard at these conventions, especially in America, that a lot of times there's so many distractions and drops that if you just hang out at the event, you're more than likely to get in. And yeah, it was a little bit of a risk for me, but I had some friends going and I knew that worst case scenario, I could play a lot of pickup games and hang out with some of the Steamforge guys and, you know, check out some other games, which, you know, I kind of got my eye on Bushido a little bit, but I won't talk about that because it's a Guild Ball podcast.
I don't want to. I thought you were all in Bushido. Yeah.
I kind of like it. It's cool. So anyways, we get to the first qualifier, and it's Thursday, and they kind of, on the website...
I'm not getting your sincerity there, Jared.
No, I like it. It's cool. I really like the game, but, you know, I don't, like... I'm a little salty about some of the Guild Ball stuff, so... And it's got nothing to do with tiebreakers. It's maybe my limited competition experience. I was just a little disappointed in a couple things, and I might just touch on those a little bit, but not to go off on a rant or anything. But I get there.
What? You're not going to go off on a rant?
Come on.
Well, maybe a little bit.
Jared, we know.
Also,
I get there on Thursday. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just what Jared was saying about not pre-registering for conventions or whatnot. Every time I've flown to the U.S. for War Machine, I've managed to somehow not be able to pre-register for the tournament I want to play in. And then through similar circumstances, people dropping, just being too smitten with cosplayers, all that sort of thing, I've been able to, yeah, play in the events I wanted to get into. So it's if you're dedicated and you really want to be in it, I think the opportunities are there. So, yeah, carry on.
Oh, yeah, I didn't regret the experience, and I kind of wanted to see Chicago. You know, I'm not well-traveled, haven't been to a lot of the big cities before like that, and it was a good experience. So I definitely had a good time and glad I went. So I get there Thursday, and the guys are hanging out for the Guild Ball, and it starts at 9 o'clock, and it's one of the first qualifiers. And I didn't even recognize it as a qualifier. I thought it was one of these side events, even though it had 32 men, because it didn't really – it didn't have like a quality. It said regional cup, and I don't know. It was confusing the way it was set up on the Adepticon website, and you kind of had to read the fine print, like a detailed information about what the tournament was. And then finally, at the end of the paragraph, it said that it was a qualifier. I thought the only qualifier was the following day, so I decided to take morticians, just screwing around. I thought, okay, well, this is just a regional cup. Who cares? And did well again. So we had a 32 man. It was five rounds. I went 4-0. Meet Jordan in the finals again. Yeah, rinse and repeat. So three straight finals, three straight qualifiers. I'm like the Buffalo Bills, which is an American football reference, you know, Super Bowls and losing. So, anyways, get to the finals. Jordan is playing Fish because I guess it's the random Guild of the Month that he's going to kick everybody's ass with. So, I'm playing morticians, and I'm thinking I'm at a huge disadvantage because he knows his team like the back of his hand, which is no different than probably any other team, but more so with these guys. So we start a draft process. He'd already chose to kick. So I thought, okay, I get to choose first. So I kind of went with my standard with morticians, Brain Pan and Memory, Graves, Obulus, Dirge, because I only went one captain, one mascot. It got to the point that he was picked. I knew his lineup from the Las Vegas Open. I knew he had picked people like Sakana, Grayscales, Avarice and Greed, and then he went Siren, or maybe Salt, or Tentacle, sorry. And I kind of saw that he was leaning towards Shark, so I went ahead and picked, I had two picks left. I went Mist, and then at the point he had to show his hand, not revealing the captain. He went with regular Siren, not the one that does the Dread Gaze.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, man, this is Shark all the way, right? So I went Cosset. I thought, yeah, I really like her speed and ability to do huge damage, even though she's vulnerable to counterattacks. And he picked Corsair, and I thought, what the fuck is this? You know, I mean, what the hell? You know, like, I've never seen you play anybody play Corsair with that kind of lineup. Just the fact that he had, I mean, Sakana is kind of understandable, but it's just such a football aspect with Sakana, Grayscales, Avarice and Greed, even though they can go either way. And then regular Siren, I thought, okay. So anyways, he kicks off. You know, we kind of go back and forth a bit. The turning point is the game is he kicked off with Siren trying to set up a Seduce, and I didn't realize how good she was at that. That if you set her up with four influence, she can jog seven, seduce, still have an influence left, dodge off that seduce pass. So say my opponent, or I'm the opponent, my model passes that Siren. He can use a free dodge off that, dodge back towards his team, then use the last influence to pass to his team, and then dodge again. So she pretty much just takes the ball and then gets out of your threat range of your entire team, which he wasn't quite able to do that with me because I kind of set up poorly where I had to use Dirge off a sprint and a pass to space, and then the ball was in open space for a little bit. So that kind of helped me slightly, but he was able to seduce the ball off one of my characters during turn one, and I pretty much puppet mastered Grayscales into range to get the shit beat out of him, you know, because it's kind of like what I enjoy doing. So at one point, he had scored a goal. Got a takeout. I did a snapback goal, took out Grayscales, 6-6. He kicks the ball back in. The scatter, it was an aggressive kick towards the scrum. Scatter ends up next to Obulus. So I've got the decision of whether to, and I still don't know if I should have left the ball there or not, because I put the ball on Obulus, and this is where Siren really shined. He had Brain Pan crowded out by a couple people. May or may not have had him knocked down, I'm not sure. But Siren went into Brain Pan, had four influence on him, and got the Seduced off the playbook. Had Obulus pass to Siren, dodged off that, did a base move, couple other attacks, shot a goal. Goes up 10-6 at that point. If I leave the ball there, he may have had to use Siren to do a couple dodges to get to the ball and then set up a goal. I don't know if he could have got the goal there or not. He says he could have, and I believe him. Like, the guy's a savant. But I would have liked to seen it in person. But, you know, it's kind of disappointing at that point, 6-6. You know, I kind of feel like the game, he probably felt like the game was in hand. And maybe it was. But, you know, my limited experience and me just trying to learn and get to that top level, I kind of felt like I was okay with it. Hmm. And then I tried to throw Cossett into Corsair at one point, and it just didn't work out. And he ended up killing Cossett again. He got two takeouts off Cossett, so that's kind of the game. Ended up being 12-6. I dropped the third, but I qualified for the regional championship. So that was awesome. The following day, I kind of hung out with the guys again, the Gilball crew. They were doing the Friday qualifier, and I thought, oh, I'll mess around. I borrowed my Brewers team, played a couple rounds, and then I just kind of dropped because, you know, I wanted to do some other things. And look, I don't recommend dropping to anybody. Like, you know, I probably should have went ahead and played the rest of the tournament. But at the time, I was 0-2, and it was a team, you know, I wasn't necessarily familiar with. And I thought, at that point, two rounds into the tournament, I don't think I'm going to ruin anybody having a bye. You know, like, anybody that takes a bye at that point is probably also 0-2, so they're not going to qualify, more than likely. So I was okay with the drop. I didn't feel like it was detrimental towards the tournament. I don't know who ended up qualifying for that or whatever. But then the final event happens the following day, where it's top 16. And the 16 were qualifiers from the regional qualifiers, but also the last-minute qualifiers at Adepticon. And that's when I decided to play Alchemist. I kind of feel like that's the team that I'm probably most competitive with, even though, you know, a lot of people are playing them at the moment, especially in the America meta. I just kind of felt like it was my best chance. I mean, I love the Morticians or whatever, but I felt like I gave Jordan one of my good games and it didn't quite work out. And ultimately, my goal was to beat him. I don't care about nationals or whatever. And, like, I want to beat him. And, you know, I feel like he's the type of person that probably wants that too. I'm sure he's tired of steamrolling the entire whatever United States of America. But somebody needs to, like, beat him, right? And so I play the first round. I play a guy. It was a mirror match. It didn't go well for him, and he ended up dropping at the end of turn one, which, well, we didn't really make it to the end of turn one, which was a negative experience for my, when I say negative play experience, that was my negative play experience, because it was awkward. And, like, the problem is, when he drops like that turn one, I kind of felt like it was detrimental to the rest of the tournament, because where Jordan had already qualified for nationals, if he wins again, everyone's playing for second place to get that national qualifier. Mm-hmm. Just the way that it's set up at the moment. So when that guy dropped, I know that anybody that plays that bye the following round, because it's 16 people, we dropped to 15, somebody's going to have a bye. They're going to get screwed over on the tiebreaker. And yes, whoever, I don't know how they set up. I know, I guess it's kind of random, and I just thought to myself, well, if somebody lost 12-11 and then they randomly get hooked up with that bye, there's no way that they can finish in second place. And to me, that was like the biggest detriment of somebody dropping out of that tournament, is I kind of felt like it had an opportunity to mess someone else's chances up. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like we're in this weird paradox now that we have to care about these stupid tiebreaker situations, to where how many points did you score for a loss and all this crap. But, you know, in order to make it to the national qualifier, I mean, that's what we're dealing with until somebody beats Jordan, right? And I don't think Jordan's at fault in any way, and I'm on the side that he should play. And look, if he doesn't play, I'm not going to show up. I don't want to show up. Like, I want to play the best, and that's the mentality I have. So all these people that feel like it's not fair that they're playing in these qualifiers, you know, they pay the same money we do, and I want to play the best. I don't give a damn about anybody else. Like, I show up to play the best, and I want to see where I measure up. So anyways, round two.
You're like, you're our Ricky Bobby, mate. love the shit out of that.
I just have a question.
Sure.
What the hell happened that somebody is conceding halfway through turn one? Did you score two goals? I mean,
well, I scored a goal with Midas. It actually was a pretty good turn for both of our ends. Like, he was trying to set up a witness me with that catalyst. Yeah. So I'd received the ball. I was setting up a goal with Midas. So I'd passed it along a bit, past the paper trail, you know, trying to set up momentum. At one point, I had four momentum. Midas ended up with the ball, dodged forward, getting set up for his goal or whatever. And I'd moved up Harry to set up a Molotov to try to decrease threat range. He was using calculus. He had Vetcat, Midas, Harry, Vitriol, and whatever, Flask. He'd already used Lore of Gold off Midas to bring Vetcat forward. He was able to get a poison off on Harry and another model, and I could see that he was setting up the witness me, that he was going to try to pour up the momentum, try to win the momentum race, and then get a witness me top of turn two. So I went ahead and cleared conditions off Harry, which dropped me down to two momentum. So it was a tight momentum race at that point. But the problem was I had compound sitting there covering Harry with a counter charge. So I knew if he didn't position correctly, I could counter charge. So I go ahead and score the goal, legendaried, got four people snared. So I'm sitting pretty good. The ball scatters. It's in open space. I think I might have been sitting at three momentum at that point. Went ahead and left Midas there. So he's going to go for his witness me. Go ahead, and he finishes his turn. He places his model. I announce counter charge, and he just loses it. Because I went ahead and rolled the dice. I mean, it's 2-1. I'm rolling like nine dice with the crowd out. I double wrapped, got 4 inches of push with two momentum. I go to five momentum, 4 inches of push, and I'm pushing back into fire. So now he's snared and on fire. I'm at five momentum, and he got nothing out of it. And the ball sitting there. So I could just do whatever the hell I want, turn two, which is probably score another goal, set up a witness me, win 12-2 or whatever.
I have to say, I feel like with no goals, a top of two witness me is probably, it seems premature, but what do I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I don't know. So he just drops, right? So, like, for an hour or whatever, I'm just kind of, like, walking around, hanging out. It was just awkward.
And how awkward is that for you, too? I mean...
Yeah, it is weird because I'm not experienced. And, I want to play. Like, that's the whole reason I make the trip and spend the money I did, right? Like, I want to play games.
But where do you go from there? It's like, so how about those Blackhawks?
Yeah, I went and did some shopping. I actually picked up brisket and picked up, I think it was like a Vet Rage or something, like the limited edition model. And that's when I discovered Bushida, right? So
you both go look at another game in round one.
Same now, thanks to that drop.
And you're like, so what do you think he'll do? Don't talk to me ever again. That sounds really terrible. I mean,
yeah, sure,
well, certainly upsetting for him. But,
whoever had the bye the next round, I mean, it didn't affect me too bad. Like, sometimes I'm used to winning, like, 12-0 or whatever and having a lot of time on my hands. So I've got, like, a routine where, you know, I might go eat a protein bar or just go hang out over here and, like, get in the mood for round two, right? Because I feel like I could go do a load of laundry sometimes. I mean, we're sitting there with an hour, and it's like, what the hell am I supposed to do with myself? I'm not there to socialize.
A bit dry. Can I dunk it in your tears?
Yeah, it's like, okay. I mean, what the hell am I supposed to do? I mean, the first time, sorry to go out on a rant or get all over the place, but first time I went to D.C., right, like, to play in a tournament, I play this guy, and I can tell he's kind of new or whatever, 12-0. I play Fish. I mean, it's like over. Like, top of turn two or something. I mean, it's over. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, what the hell am I going to do now? Like, I'm 4 hours from home. People are like, clocking out and shit. I sat there for an hour and 37 minutes before round two. And I'm like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this time? And it just messed with my mind, right? Like, so now I've got a routine where I at least go occupy myself, or thank God for conventions, right? Like, if you go to the local game store.
Have you got Tinder on your phone?
Dude. I think that's actually accurate. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what happened, wasn't it?
Yeah, which can also be a distraction because you start a conversation on there, and then you start getting these photos or whatever, and you're thinking, man, you know, Gilbert doesn't sound too great right now when I could go meet this person. And you're hanging out with people that don't necessarily have the greatest hygiene anyways. I'm not imagining anyone that plays games. You get these quality photos on there, and you're like, you're looking across the table at this guy that may not have necessarily bathed within the last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, may not have just left his mom's basement. I'm not sure.
Hold on.
But then I decided myself. 56,
44, edit.
Yeah. Like, I think back to your original conundrum, I think the professional thing to do is to re-rack and show them how to not get ruffle stomp.
Oh, no, I totally gave him tips. I'm like, hey, man, you know, I noticed you like playing butchers. You know, let me give you some advice, like what to do with...
Move into my charge range and let me score goals on you.
Yeah, no, I told him, I said, hey, man, you should consider, like, this turn one opening move and just see how this works for you the rest of the tournament. You know, I'd try to give him, like, a gambit to play with and then let him figure out the rest of the game. Because I feel like if you can get your turn one into a decent position, it can lead you to being more competitive for the rest of the game. And I think that's for anybody. Like, if you're new to the game and you really want to concentrate on being a better player, I think you have to have a good turn one. I think turn one would be the key focus point for a newer player if you want to be competitive. So, I totally talked to the guy about turn one, you know?
That's very interesting because Strictly the Worst came to a very similar conclusion on one of their podcasts. But I agree with you in that, getting your first turn nailed down, or at least having an overriding strategy for what you want to achieve on your first turn is extremely important.
Yeah, because I think it's one of the few opportunities in this game where you don't have so many random events, and that it is kind of set up because where people, I mean, you're just checking threat ranges and you're not having that interaction of having to worry about model activation as much necessarily. So, you know, where you're on opposite ends of the pitch, you're practically just setting yourself up for warfare. And I do think it's the premier opportunity to help a person go from like 12-0 to 12-6, or, you know, maybe start winning games on a competitive level. I totally tried to help the guy out. I'm not one of these dickheads. So anyways,
Get good.
Hey, he didn't drop. Like, I respect him, right? Like, you get 12-0. Yeah, and the guy played the whole tournament. So, look, I got mad respect for people like that. Like,
it shows I will help him out
every time. Yeah. Yeah, because to me, that's the type of person, you know, I would back through.
That you want to play again. So.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's not just the fact I won either. Like, it's somebody that loves the game and, you know, they're there for the right reasons. So anyways, we get to round two at the championship, and of course I get the pleasure of playing Jordan again, which is pretty much all I do. And we actually had a really good tournament, but it kind of opened my eyes up to maybe why Vet Catalyst, and yes, maybe I'll sound like a rinse and repeat from Strictly the Worst, but I kind of feel like Vet Catalyst isn't quite as competitive as I thought he was originally. And I feel like when people find out tactics that worked against him, I mean, he has his moments or whatever, but I do feel like he's extremely linear and, I don't know, predictable. But we did have an interesting matchup. Unfortunately, I had to send Midas forward because of my setup to get the ball. He had scattered it towards the center of the pitch. And we go through, you know, a whole bunch of shenanigans through a couple turns. It ends up being 8-6 with me having Vitriol on the ball on the right side, engaging Flask, who only has like one hit point or whatever. And then brought on Vet Catalyst back onto the pitch to threaten his Catalyst, who at the moment had about 19 health. So I need a takeout and a goal to win the game. And I went with Midas first, and now I kind of wonder if maybe I should have went with Vet Catalyst and tried to go ahead and get his Catalyst down. Because when I went with Midas first, I was trying to set up an opportunity to knock down his Catalyst, but also to whittle him down a little bit on health and to force his hand to go into Vet Catalyst with Vitriol. But I didn't realize how good Vitriol was at shutting down Vet Catalyst. He got into Vet Catalyst and set up a clone and then got base to base. And at that moment, I'm screwed with only two influence. Because if I attack and have a success, clone, and then he's still base to base. Attack again, get lucky and get a double push. I still can't get my charge off. So I think that's a moment where Vet Catalyst is extremely weak. So when he set that up, I had an opportunity to kill Flask, get my point to put me at 7, and then score a goal with Vitriol and probably lose the game 12-11. But, you know, I'm just not interested in that shit. Like, I wanted to beat him. So that's why I went with the activation order I went. And also made a dumb decision of charging Compound because I was low on the clock. He actually got 2 points on the clock and then killed I can't remember, he killed somebody, but I charged Compound where I should have just sprinted to engage and then just kicked the goal. I had the momentum and stuff. And I think that's another thing. Like, if I want to get to the next level, I need to get quicker on the clock. You know, because when you go up against somebody like him, he puts the clock pressure on you because he's just so analytical and he has so much experience that he just puts it on you. Like, he has an idea of 2 or 3 moves ahead. And if he knows that you're contemplating or whatever, he may just go ahead and, like, just move his mascot real quick, hit the clock, not even say anything, and you know it's your turn. And I think I'm getting used to it, like, playing him a few games now, but I think anyone that goes up against him, that's a disadvantage you're going to have right off the bat, is that he knows how to use that clock as pressure, and he's such a skilled player. And it's a good experience. So I guess to wrap it up, I had a good trip. I loved Adepticon. I would definitely go back again. All the Chicago guys, I got to meet a lot of their meta. So it wasn't just, Jordan, Pat, and Alex. I got to meet a lot of the locals that played as well, and they were all top-notch people, just really passionate about the game. Everybody would want to discuss Guild Ball or strategies, and, it's just a good open community. So I think if anybody out there is intimidated or, like, you don't want to play on a competitive level, you need to understand, I never played a tabletop game before. Like, I just go to board game night and play, like, Euros or strategy games. When I first saw this game, I thought, what the hell is this bullshit where I got to measure? And I said, I'm not going to take the time for that crap, but now it's taken off. I love it. It's a good experience. To me, it was the sport aspect that kind of drew me in, because I'm not, like, your prototypical geeky person or whatever. And it's been a good experience. Like, at first I was kind of a little antisocial. I thought, I don't really want to hang out at the game store with all these random people and it's awkward or whatever. But I've developed some really good relationships through Vassal, through these local tournaments. I love Bill and the guys up at DC. They're always great hosts. They go out of their way to greet people. Like, if you're a new person on the scene, they'll stop everything they're doing to come say hi to you, get you set up, if you got any questions. I mean, the first time I met Bill, it's kind of a funny story. I went up to his store, and it's a two-hour drive or whatever, and I thought, screw it, I'm going to go up on Tuesday night. They play Guild Ball. I want to see what it's all about. So I just drove all the way up there. I was off work. I said, let's do it, Packed up 2 or 3 teams. Figured I'd get a game or two. I heard about Bill through Guild Ball tonight, and I knew he was the guy to kind of get in touch with. So I'd message him through Facebook or whatever, asked him when they play, met him in person. He pulls out a business card and gives me his card. He's like, hey, I'm Bill Anderson. If you got any questions, get in touch with me. And the guy is just so personable. And he's the type of person I feel like we need in the community when it comes to growing the community. Because it's not all about, to me, it's not all about the meta and the elite or whatever. It's about getting those people involved to help keep this game alive that, are going to buy the hunters and then be pissed off because maybe they aren't what they expected. But then they're still going to buy other teams, right? Like, they're not just going to drop because they've had those good experiences at the local game store and they met, like, a Bill Anderson or somebody that's, just a true gentleman of the game and a pleasure to be around. So, it's well been a good experience for me. Yeah.
Well said. No, it's nice to get a sense that, these dudes who you hear on the internet are actually real people, are actually pretty decent dudes. I think I've played Jordan a few times on Vassal, and every time I've played him, he's been thoroughly decent bloke. I am yet to see Alex on Vassal, and I keep asking him on Twitter, but, maybe we'll get there. But I think Tobias is pretty, he's pretty big on the whole community building thing as well, and has been working to that to that effect in Queensland pretty seriously over the last few months, which is really Tobias's cue to jump in and talk about.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good segue to move on to topic two, where basically, Tobias, we've got on to chat kind of metas and community building. This was kind of a follow-on from a recording we did that failed due to Tobias being too glitchy in the Matrix. So, yeah, Tobias, what do you want to talk about in terms of the community and, you know, how to build a meta?
Sorry, I was just enraptured by the honeyed potion of David's voice.
Yeah, so I think Jared's going to drop from the call. We might get his goodbye, and then we'll jump into it.
Right.
Yeah, sorry to steal your thunder there, my friend. Keep playing Brewers, you know?
Keep playing Brewers.
No, man, you're a top-notch guy. But anyways, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for, let me share my experiences with you guys. And, I'm so glad I met you guys, and I really love your podcast. And, you know, I feel like it's people like you that are driving this game to continue to do wonderful things and, keep up the good work. Thanks so much.
That's nice of you, mate. Yeah, cheers.
You're a champ.
Yeah, and on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your rating of the Neverending Story?
Well, since we had our conversation earlier, I give it like a 3.
Solid 3.
That's a travesty. It's a solid 8.
So. It's the never-ending part that bothers me.
A trail.
Like, you've got a luck dragon, you've got a very heartfelt forced death scene. It's got a magic turtle of wisdom.
Last night, actually.
Man.
Got nerves.
I guess flying different strokes back for different folks, I suppose. Who knows?
Oh, God.
And who can forget the title song from Lamal?
I can.
All right, man. If you have to get to work, we understand that, you need to get moving. That's all good.
Yeah. I'll see you, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure talking to you guys.
All right, mate. No worries.
Cheers, Jared. Take it easy, man.
Good
night. Bye-bye.
All right, Tobias, you're all ours.
Come inside and see what's on the slab.
Meta building. You wanted to talk about building metas and sportsmanship, right?
Building communities was the initial topic, I guess. But that's actually just on that very quickly. I'd just like to touch on that. I've been struggling a lot to try and band or breathe life back into the Brisbane Guildball community. And then nothing, nothing, nothing. And then last weekend I was at Trent Dennison's wedding. He's just got married.
Congratulations, so, Deno.
Shout out to Deno.
I tell you what, he's punching above his weight. Toya's, she looked beautiful, man. I saw some photos of her. She looked lovely.
She's a lovely lady. Trent is a very wonderful man. Mm. So they're going to be very happy together. Mm. And at the wedding, at the reception rather, I was talking to Gavin Clark, who used to be the proprietor of Irresistible Force. Mm-hmm. And we were just having a conversation about Guildball, and I was asking him if he still played, and he was like, yes. And then asking, trying to draw upon his mentorship or his wealth of experience for how to try and restart a community. And one of the things he said was just come down to Irresistible Force and, you know, pick a night and come down and say you're coming down and see if people will come. And so after months of not having anybody show up or reply even, except for some random dude from Canberra, I put a post up on the Irresistible Force page, and then suddenly like 6 people want to come out and play Guild Ball. So that's a massive win, and thank you, Gavin. Round of applause for you.
So that random dude from Canberra is Matty Graham, right?
Yes, yeah. Who is also gone through a very similar process of trying to organically grow a community, and has been doing very well by all accounts and from the conversation we're having, to the point now where they have essentially Orange, Canberra and Sydney. Those metas are all almost working sort of harmoniously to support each other's metas as well. And that, I feel, is an amazing thing. They'll even travel to each other's tournaments. So that's just great. Kind of like what Jared was talking about before, like driving 2 or 3 hours just to go play Toy Soldiers. So that's awesome.
Yeah. No, that's good, man. I'm glad to hear you've turned a corner. It's almost like you got your horse out of the bog of despair or something.
Yes, exactly. I don't think it was called the bog of despair. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
So finally put the Spurs into Artax's side and got him out. So it was good. Well, not that I condone cruelty to horses.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that Orange is kicking off as well, because we have talked to Hayden Sheehan over Vassal, over the internet, and he's gone from just himself and his partner to, you know, building a little meta down there, which is awesome. And that's going to have an impact for Nationals as well, so we're looking at, like, the numbers of that particular tournament growing as a result. Yeah, it's really good.
And from my understanding, Adelaide's coming along quite nicely as well.
Yes. So Adelaide's doing all right.
It's ticking along.
Good. Yeah, yourselves, Tim, and all sorts of colourful characters down there. So.
Tell you what, that Timmy Wyatt, oh my god.
Yeah.
He's just a beautiful.
Beautiful is an adequate description. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Speaking of what you were just talking about with the kind of person or the, you know, players that come out, and Jared kind of sparked my thought on this as well. Do you get, because he comes from a background that isn't necessarily tabletop gaming, and it's something I've thought about, do you think there is or it's possible to profile a certain kind of person that is into Guild Ball? Because I, coming from a Warmer Horde background, I think they're slightly different. I think there's more of a tactical sense and a few other components that make someone that will really love Guild Ball different to someone that's just a standard tabletop gamer.
I think there's certainly probably something to be said for that. As Jared was just on the show, and he was saying that this is his first tabletop, I guess, sport game or war game or however you wish to define it. And that being said, I know several players who are very keen on a game called Blood Bowl, where they weren't necessarily very keen on things like War Machine or 40K or so forth, who have also dabbled into Guild Ball as well, and I think that sort of sideways step is possibly easier than transitioning from something like War Machine. Although both systems have similarities in different capacities. So Guild Ball is almost, you could imagine, in the middle of the spectrum, where Blood Bowl's on one side and War Machine's on the other side.
Now, so I guess as we've built our community in Adelaide and continue to do so, it's definitely something that I've thought about, because the players that come across aren't necessarily specifically from a Warmer Horde, you know, background. Whereas coming from there, I mean, the big appeal I saw, other than the sporting kind of component, was like playing a battle-heavy War Machine kind of list, where there's less models, but there's more depth in the model interactivity. Yeah. And that was the appeal for me. So, yeah, I kind of got my brain going as to, you know, whether you could profile or come up with a, you know, idea of what this person kind of looked like to help other communities, and this is worldwide, so, you know, help people identify the right kind of players that they think will just love it, and not, you know, coerce them, but actually just show them the game and let them make that decision.
I think another game where you might be able to draw that kind of parallel is X-Wing, because that's very model-like, but each model, especially with the pilot upgrades and all the different cards and bits and bobs, can have a lot of depth and variation, or internal variation. And one of the things I was talking to Matt, I think, but he was saying that he's getting a lot of like Magic the Gathering or LCG/CCG players who are interested in the game as well. For that kind of more dynamic activation is more interesting to them than the sort of static I go, then you go of something like War Machine or 40K as well, so like, because there's more opportunity to respond and counterplay than there is in a lot of other games, tabletop games.
This I can see parallels with the speed of Guild Ball and the speed of Magic. You know, they play out at a reasonably similar rate. Obviously, Magic's faster, but the tempo of both games is quite similar.
Right. And in Magic, you've also got that sort of sideboard element and you know, things where you can, I guess, if good planning helps you significantly, I suppose. Mm. Especially with respect to the meta that you're expecting to face.
Mm. You've been playing Engineers pretty consistently. So how are you finding they are rolling out in Season 3 versus Season 2?
In Season 2, I found it was a very steep learning curve with the Engineers. However, once I got on top of that curve, I found I was doing quite well with them. And in Season 3, I think they got significantly better, in mostly with like the nuance that they picked up. Just even simple things like velocity, getting acrobatics, things like that were really, really interesting. The way the nest changed was interesting. So that being said, I think they still have a steep learning curve or a high learning curve, and they are better than they were in Season 2.
Yeah. I think they support a more dynamic play style too. I mean, I've been playing with the local league we've been running.
Yes.
I think once you get your head round the interactions between, you know, they're all support kind of players. There's no real kind of super solo. And once you get your head round the interactions they can all do to aid each other, but the fact that you won't always do them in the optimal, you know, order, that you can roll out in a certain way and always play a very dynamic game, because they've always, you know, they're playing that scoring and takeout game at the same time. They're quite competitive with the way the Season 3 scoring kind of meta is.
Yes. I think that's actually one of the Engineers' strengths, is that they're always, if planned correctly, you always have a game to play, because they can play for damage, they can play for control, they can play for scoring. So they can play onto all the different, I guess, styles of play. So there's something there, but they're kind of the jack of all trades, master of none, in a way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I find the speed of their scoring game is crazy good as well. Like, I actually find scoring Engies harder to deal with than like Engies who want to take a 2-2 game. But having that ability to switch up playstyles on the fly is, I think it's key. Like, we've had a few conversations now where we've talked about the importance of 2-2, or how the game seems to direct you to that result. But having that ability to, like, just turn it around on the fly is, you know, really versatile. Because you never quite know what's going to happen in a game of Guild War. You know?
No. Yeah, it's also the threat of that. And I'll bring this up because I know Tobias is way too polite to point out how well he schooled me last night. But we had a game, and the threat of their ability to do both is actually a really good weapon. So I underestimated a threat range based on a really good pin vice control alternator play that Tobias did, and it put me on the back foot 4-0 up. I think it was your first activation. Then I was in the position where I was holding the ball, trying to set up a goal, but looking for a 6-point activation. But because of where Tobias had kind of got to on the board and where he was kind of slowly mulching through my players, it was never an optimal time, because at any point that I score that goal, you know, he finishes off killing someone and or scores a goal as well. Like, they can just flip between the two and threat both at the same time. I just found that quite fascinating, and it put me in a real, bind that I didn't know how to react to that.
That is, I guess, really good to have that. Sorry, I'm just babbling like an idiot.
Yeah, it was, hey, look, to be fair, Tobias clocked himself out on his own accord, but I'm pretty sure it would have been 12 and very little for me. So, yeah.
You can just edit that out, me not knowing how to talk. That would be appreciated.
No, that's fine.
I would not believe the amount of editing that goes on. Man, I make you fuckers sound good. the amount of ums and ahs and you knows, and oh my god, it drives me mental. But hey. Just
pausing for breath.
Yep, there's a lot of that. You know who the worst is? Matt Hart. He was a bloody monster to edit.
Really?
He's got so many vocal tics.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lovely.
It's interesting.
Wow. That is
interesting. It's all the ketamine. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting at the 3-hour mark when you want to kill yourself. Yeah, it's great. Anyway.
Trying to trying to put this conversation back on the rails.
Yes.
And talking about metas, what in particular were you wanting to focus on with respect to the meta? Is it how you feel the meta is shaping, or where it's going?
Yeah, well, let's talk Fish and Alchemists. I mean, Steve Easton, last time we on the last cast, he pretty much outright said that he doesn't believe that it's a problem. It's just about knowing how to play into those matchups. But yeah, what's your take?
But in principle, I agree with Steve, and that the Fish and the Alchemists, really, you can get very good with them very quickly, or you can get to a competitive level with them very quickly for the reasons that were stated, that their game plan is very direct. It gives you a very clear objective of what you want to be doing, and it gives you a very clear plan of how to achieve that as well. Mm-hmm. So, and then with a little bit of practice and action, you can make that happen. And it can be very challenging for your opponent to stop that, mostly because in Alchemist's case, Midas, with his unpredictable and his new heroic, can be very hard to pin down, and Vitriol is also very hard to pin down. Fortunately, though, neither Vitriol or Midas can really effectively take out a player anymore, I don't think. And Catalyst is just so slow. So you can split the team up, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's something that I feel is worth trying to do, even to the point where if you can concede the goal but kill Midas, I think that may almost be a worthy trade, because then you get to the point to draw with a game Overwatch. If you can wipe out a small chunk of their team to the point where the rest are kind of staggering in or staging in twos and threes, then the whole team doesn't seem nearly as bad as when they're all in optimal positions all the time. Mm. And actually, with Fish in Season 3, I don't have very much experience at all, so I don't really feel qualified to speak out too much about them. But I'm sure there are ways to do similar things. And Fish have always kind of suffered from the inability to generate authentic takeouts, which don't involve the sideline. So there is that. Whilst you might not be able to use that in an offensive capacity, you can certainly mean that, I guess, against Shark at least, you don't have to worry about it so much either. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's ways to shut them down, and I think there's a lot of tech pieces that have sort of been discussed on the forums as well, and, you know, on this cast and other casts. But I don't think any team is unbeatable. I think
No.
I mean, I understand why people get frustrated, but I think if you default to that position that, you know, some teams are OP, then you rob yourself of, I guess, the critical faculty to work out the problem, you know, how to counter the problem.
Yeah. I think it's what you're saying there is very correct, in that certain players will champion certain teams to a degree, and public perception of certain teams gets to the point where they feel that Team X is unbeatable, or Team X has the highest likelihood of winning or doing well. And that perception and opinion not only can help propel the players on that particular journey quite far, if you're coming up against that team and you've been constantly subjected to propaganda, if you will, whereby this team is unbeatable or too hard to beat and you can't beat it, then people will naturally take that on board, and they're almost at a disadvantage from the beginning, from the outset.
Yeah. So I see what you're saying, but I also think there's a flip side to that where the repetitive play into certain teams actually conditions, and maybe this is, you know, a mentality thing that we're talking about, conditions you to have the ability to know how to play into those teams. And so I almost think if you're ahead of the meta, or if you can, you know, play guilds that you think are the ones that can beat the current trend, then you're actually one step ahead of everyone. And I've kind of noticed this with some of the tools. You know, we play into a lot of Fish and a lot of Alchemists where we are, so we're kind of seeing those high-scoring teams, and I play, you know, both of them. But I'm warming more and more to the engineers, into the tools that they have to actually shut that down and play a really specific game into those teams.
I certainly agree with you, though, that the second edge to that sword is that if you are constantly exposed to those teams and those strategies, that you will armor yourself against them, and that exposure will help you to be better able to deal with them.
Yeah.
However, it's all a question of your mental willingness to allow yourself the idea that, well, hang on, they're not unbeatable, and yes, all I need to do is just think about it and be logical and deconstruct it and work out my way to beat this team. And that sort of groupthink doesn't often recommend like an individual response like that or allow people to organically come up with those solutions. If they're basically always thinking, you know, so and so or this medium tells me that this can't be done, therefore it can't be done. It's like the concept of learned helplessness.
I agree. I think one of the first steps you could take is just understanding that it's a dice game, and so there's always a possibility that you can win. You know, there's always a element to it. Now, I know that's, you don't rely on luck or, you know, misfortune of someone else, but I think that alone should give you a stepping stone to accept that, you know what, I can actually beat the team. And, you know, obviously we can't help people with their own, you know, mental approach to a game. But, you know, that at least, you know, arms them with the fact that it's still possible to beat any team.
Every now and then, a 3 or 4 or 5 dice shot at goal will miss.
I think it's important as well not to confuse a very good player with the power level of a team as well. You know, it's like Jared was saying before, like, it doesn't matter what Knack plays, right? He's going to play each team with the same level of ability.
Yeah,
you know,
with competence.
That's right. So conflating one with the other seems to be a mistake. Seems to be an error.
You know? Actually, yeah, I agree with that. There's just hearkening back to Hallowed Antiquity. In 3rd Ed 40K, I think it was, or 4th Ed, Dark Eldar got released. And we're actually having a very similar conversation, Keith Evelyn, a friend of mine. And we're talking about Dark Eldar and Space Marines, and Dark Eldar at the time were particularly terrible, and the conversation was that a good player can win with Dark Eldar, however, two equally good players, Dark Eldar against Space Marines, the Space Marines are more likely to win just because they have better numbers. Mm-hmm. And how that fits into this conversation is that a good player will always do well with a good team, however, an easier team to play well with, get you better results quicker.
I've been playing Hunters. I've had a few games with Hunters over the last week or two. And I'm actually coming around to Theron. I'm back on my Theron's okay.
Speaking of Theron, have you seen the new mini for Theron?
I have.
Yeah.
Young Theron, John Rambo.
Yes, yeah. John Rambo.
Yeah, he looks all right, man. I'm keen to pick him up, just because I like those alt sculpts.
It does actually look like a very nice mini, too, with that skinning knife. So he's like, come get some.
But I cannot wait until these new Hunters drop. I think they're going to be like completely new team.
I'm actually, the one thing I'm really excited for out of that whole pack is the wolf mascot. Just because I really like wolves. It's almost enough to make me buy into Hunters, which is pretty exciting in itself. So well done.
Do you need one of those airbrushed wolf t-shirts, like with a wolf howling at the moon on a black background?
Look, I might have enough stock t-shirts for every day of the week.
I think I know what I'm going to get you for Christmas now.
Anyway.
What's your size? Extra buff?
touche.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you wanted to talk about...
Ruggedly handsome.
Yeah, well, look, I'm looking at your picture on Skype right now, and... Well, I've sneakily rubbed one out whilst we've been talking. you might have noticed I went quiet there for a while. Well, that was for a reason. But you wanted to talk about...
Sneaky. Everyone heard it.
Oh, man. You know, we started off with Falkor the Luck Dragon, and I think that's where we'll end as well. But we've got a little way to go. You wanted to talk about concession in games, or collusion, is that right?
I don't know if your listeners are aware, however, recently on the interwebs, there has been this massive issue of whether or not it's okay to concede to your opponent or to orchestrate a draw with your opponent. And particularly in situations such as Jared was bringing up earlier, where there are, I guess, regional qualifying spots, or there's some sort of significant prize on the line that may not necessarily go to the eventual winner of the tournament. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of conversation and opposing points of view, whereby some people feel it is certainly okay to what amounts to collude with, I guess, your stable of players or your play group. And on top of that, where it's also considered okay to organize a draw at the top table of an event. And
yeah,
I have to say that I do not feel that either of these things are okay, either in the context of being healthy for the game and the game's reputation, or in the context of the quote-unquote moral ethics of gamesmanship.
So you mentioned a term that we've been discussing, and the idea around that you have a social contract when you enter into these games, or a moral contract. I foolishly made a post on the forums. And for newer players, I would suggest, taking the forums with a pinch of salt, because there can be a lot of salt on there as well. But the idea that anytime you play a game, you have that kind of social and moral obligation, you're entering into a contract with other people. And I think, people need to hold themselves to a certain standard when they're playing this. So even, and my point on the forum was, even if the rules allow something to happen, whether you can, throw a game or not throw a game, but come to a certain point differential at the end of a game to aid your buddy, there's still a moral line, which in my book is a law or a rule that you're crossing. And you owe it to the game and to everyone else within the game to actually adhere to these kind of moral standards.
Yes, I agree with you. And I feel that, even if you remove all the other layers and you sort of slice away everything to the point where it's just two people engaged in a game of Guild Ball, and just, if you will, put them in a space where there's no outside factors or influence or nothing impacting on that game, you wouldn't just organically decide to call it a draw, or to have one person say, well, I'm just going to get to 11 and that'll be my best.
But we've copped a lot of shit on Twitter. We kind of open ourselves up to this a bit for saying that, this whole tiebreaks argument, what does it matter? You're playing for first, and I think it's Jared's attitude as well. Everything else beyond first is not really relevant in a competitive sense. There can only be one winner in these things, and if you're a competitive person and you want to do your best, then that's all you tend to worry about. And I feel like this talk about collusion for, I guess, second place or third place, and I think it's probably more relevant in the context of qualifying for bigger competitions, but it really doesn't hold yourself to a high standard of play or a high standard of sportsmanship. And ultimately, it's you're colluding for second place, for third place. It's shit, man.
Absolutely.
You may as well put that time and energy into fucking getting better at the game and trying to take out first.
Yeah, and that comes back to Jared's point where he's like, okay, he wants to play Jordan. He wants to beat the best. Because, okay, you might collude to get to that US Nationals. You've still got to turn up and beat Jordan if you want to win it, right?
Exactly.
So, what prize are you actually winning before that? You're winning the opportunity to then go and get your ass handed to you by Jordan, or are you going to actually push yourself to get better? And we've all acknowledged that, okay, the US meta is different to here because of the volume, and so they have to go through this process. But yeah, the end result is still the same. You still have to beat the best player to be the best.
Yeah.
Yes. As wrestling fans would know, there used to be someone, I can't remember his name, but his thing was, to be the man, you've got to beat the man. And,
yeah.
I think Jake from Hall of Legends would know. He seems to be all over this wrestling stuff.
Quick, call him up.
Yeah, big shout out. I like that dude.
So also, there's a couple of things here that I just want to clarify. I feel that if you're hanging in there and your attitude is never say die, and I'm going to play for every single point, and that happens to get you to 11, and then you lose, that's different to because there's a fundamental difference of intention to say, I am playing to win, but I just got to 11, to saying, I'm going to play to get to 11 points, and I'm okay if I lose from that point on.
Yeah.
I think those are two very different mental standpoints. And also Jared brought up before about how he just wants to play to win and to be the best, you've got to beat the best, so forth. And I think that's great. However, I feel that I differ from Jared because Jared says he's happy for pre-qualified players to be at any event. So whereas I feel personally that if you remove pre-qualified players from qualifying events, you remove a lot of the issues that have been dredged up this year.
Yeah. I think this comes back to my kind of, and maybe not a moral question, but that I feel, and I'm not putting it on Jordan to do this, but well, I feel there is a line there. Yeah, I feel there is a line there that if you have qualified, maybe you owe it to the community. I don't know. Like, that's a choice for each person to make themselves. I don't think there is actually a moral kind of line there. But, you know, potentially if you want the meta to grow and other people to kind of win, then maybe that is something that you can allow to happen. So, you know.
I don't give a shit if qualified people already play. I mean, you know, I think everybody's got a right to rock out to a tournament and play if they've put their money down. What it does do is it does skew the way results are going to fall. You know, because you pretty much guarantee that somebody like Jordan's always going to come first. But then his stable of Chicago players will also skew the results in such a way that I guess dudes who've travelled a long way, you know, and fall at the final hurdle don't get that second place. And I think that probably bleeds into, like, more of an issue with the way the tiebreak system is set up than anything else. And I've actually come around to some of the arguments about tiebreaks. I think, you know, whilst I'm always going to be play to win, do your best, you know, fuck where you come, I do have some sympathy now for, you know, the counter-argument that actually, the structure does mean that, you know, if you fall at the final table and if you get towed, then you're probably going to drop to sixth, whereas you would reasonably expect to finish second or third. And I wonder whether that's just the case of changing the final system to you know, cutting to top four tables. So in that last round, you're playing first, second, third, fourth. I can see an argument for that. I don't know. There's people who study this in detail.
I'm actually a very big fan of Final Table, and there have been so many War Machine tournaments which do use strength of schedule, where the player who is on the final table with the eventual winner can drop down off the podium. The most famous example probably being the Australian WTC team a couple of years ago, who were on the final table and ended up fifth. So,
absolutely.
After just destroying everyone for the entire tournament.
Man, I have every faith that Perkins is looking at this at the moment, you know, trying to work out where to take it to. I mean, Steamforge is smart enough to know it needs addressing.
My point, though, is that whether it's people seem to get hung up on points differential versus strength of schedule, and neither system is perfect, and neither system guarantees that the quote-unquote deserved player finishes in the right spot for them. Outside of first,
all bets are off, really, in any system.
Yep. This is why we've gone with Ricky Bobby as our mascot. We're worried about snow blindness in cats, too, Tobias. You might know. It's affecting more and more cats.
Really?
Yeah, it scares the shit out of us.
That's probably a big issue for white cats who are also genetically inclined to deafness. So if you've got a deafblind cat, what really is the point?
You're an animal lover, I can tell. You own a dog.
I have a very lovely dog, actually. I want another dog. This dog we have at the moment is called a Bichon Frise, so it's basically a little ball of fluff, but I would like a German Shepherd. However, Jade is scared of them, so we compromised and she got what she wanted, as most marriages.
Sounds like that played out the way it used with us.
Man, I kind of want a pet otter. I've been seeing a lot of them pop up on Reddit, and all right, what else have we got to talk about? We've been at this for nearly 2 hours now.
Really? Nearly 2 hours?
Yeah. Unbelievable. I don't really want to talk about any more games with Tobias. I'm yet to get to 12 points combined playing him. So.
I had a game against Jared where I went down 0-12. So take that for yourself.
It was interesting, like the talking about the opening play when he chatted about that. In that, I've noticed, the games. So the last two against you, Tobias, one or two against Jared, or in fact, probably more, but each way. Where, if one of us can just absolutely skew that opening play to their advantage, it just snowballs from there, and you find the tempo's gone, you're chasing your tail, and like I've done it to Jared, Jared's done it to me, you did it to me the last probably two games with the velocity goal. It has such an impact on the game, and it should be such a simple thing to set up and be ready for, because it's such a static way of laying out your models.
That's certainly true, and it's actually, as a corollary to that, I think kicking allows you to set up your first turn in a much more aggressive way than receiving does. And David, who plays a lot of fillet, will probably agree that kicking with fillet is infinitely more threatening to the other team than receiving with her.
Yeah, that's right. Just having her, because she's so fast already, because she has such access to threat extension.
Yes.
And last activation for her is a big deal as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but she loves
it. I'd say any guild or team with a good kicker can put the other player in that position. And with the way tournament kind of go, with the nine and picking last, I think it's actually stronger to kick off. You're really worried about some play that they've got or, some team that's going to, do something to you. By putting the onus on them with the ball and also threatening them, you just gain so much board position that you can play the game in their half. I completely agree.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think the first two seasons of the game put so much emphasis on receiving and just bandying around the ball until you can finally get that last activation or second last activation score. However, in season three, they've actually taken a lot of the 22-inch raw threat off the table. So, like, Mist can't just natively score a goal anymore. Flint can't score a goal anymore. I mean, Friday can still score a goal just out of a hat by herself. But most of the other deep strikers really need some sort of outside influence on them, or at the very least, to dodge forward 4 inches.
Take the dodge, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the second they do that, if you have someone who's kicked in a really strong position where they can punish that ball holder because that was their second last activation, or that is their last activation to go, then what do they have left? I mean, they have some momentum, but you're about to make that up, potentially either kill their ball holder or score a goal, or I think it would be very hard to do both, but it might be possible. So.
Well, with Billet, you can set up to do both in the next turn, can't you? You can get the momentum to then kill them, score, and then they're fucked at that point. So
yeah, she can conceivably
get out of dodge.
often easily go to 8 points at the start of 2. She gets a couple 2 takeouts. Yeah, that seems pretty good. But I guess Avarice and Greed are the exception to that. I mean, they're the long-range goal threat on turn 1. The downside being that it's generally going to be a 4-2 trade. So you do allow your opponent to get the snapback goal and the takeout. So I think they've balanced that quite well.
Yes. Also, if you have compound, it's just off the table.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. Which is what you were talking about before, about some of these more niche or borderline players that can make their way into a lineup, like the Jared was saying, the chemical resist, that sort of thing. So
yeah, well, that lost him that lost him a pretty significant game from I think bottom of one.
So,
I bet you'll never forget that.
No. I think kicking, certainly in Season 3, is a lot more powerful than still possibly the largest stable of players understand it to be. So because of that board position and also being able to outmaneuver your opponent in the pick ban stage. So...
And having last activation, like you can often have a 6 influence model for last activation and win initiative.
And against most other teams, unless they have some sort of range control element, whoever you've kicked with is generally going to be quite safe, unless they have a real deep striker. But then even if they do come into you, suddenly they're on your side of the pitch, you're still probably there, ready to go straight back at them. Yeah, and it's just seems very strong. And it lets you dictate the pace of the game to a degree as well.
Absolutely. I think it definitely steals the tempo early, or at least forces a tempo question to the opponent. Now, what I liked about your play, or the Engies in general, and I'm actually I really love playing them, is the fact that if they do have, so say they're playing a Ballista or, so you're playing Engies into someone that's got that range threat and like a knockdown or whatever, you've still got Ratchet. And so you can basically kick with velocity, and not many other teams have the ability to remove conditions without needing the momentum. So it's really difficult for them to basically remove that threat of velocity or whoever you've kicked with Colossus, do it that way, off the table. It's so good.
Yeah, absolutely. Ratchet just gives you a lot of redundancy in sort of dangling her out there like that, which is really good.
Just sweet Engie tech. Sweet Engie tech.
Yes. Yeah, and it's one of those little rules that if you're not very familiar with engineers or you don't play them a lot, you can easily forget about it too. So
you play into them, the more I want to play them. Like, I feel that they've got a lot of subtle options that are not necessarily obvious from the outset. You know, like that plethora of close control is really significant, as is reanimate. You know, as is fucking stoic. You know, and
stoic. Sorry.
Like, it's actually really annoying. You know, you just take certain results off the book. Like, I think it messes with Harry a bit, like not being able to get that first push, which is great. You know, it's wasted influence, or it takes away an option.
Takes away momentum too.
Exactly,
so
just
these like passive momentum draining things, and especially on Colossus and Hoist who have a tough height and either stoic or sturdy, it really diminishes the power of some of the combination results as well. Mm. So I mean, Colossus even has close control in there. So if you had a result which was a single push, 1 damage and a tackle, momentous, you'd feel pretty confident in most cases that you'd get that out. But Colossus would just say, no dice. You're done.
Yeah. Big wooden finger.
Yep. No, you've got me intrigued through the games that we've played, Tobias, you and I. I'm intrigued to play them. And I think they'll probably be next.
Cool.
They'll be the next team that I pick up and play with for a bit.
Well, just championing engineers all over the country. So, speaking of which, I'm going to be down in Adelaide for your little soiree.
Hey, excellent.
I did hear that from Heath. Do you fly out that day, or have you negotiated?
No, I fly out Friday night. Well, it's on the awesome. Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on the Saturday.
Flying in Friday. I'll be there for a week, so hopefully we can get more than, you know, a couple more games, have dinner or something like that. That'd be really good.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right, what else have we got to talk about, or do you want to wrap it up?
I think we wrap it up at this point.
All right.
I think we've had a good chat, so...
Indeed.
Probably no need to over-gild the lily, as it were.
Oh.
Get out.
I was just going to say, Tobias, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to chat to you and try to score victory points against you. Eventually, I might get to 12, cumulative.
Thank you very much for having me, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure, as always, and looking forward to the next time.
Yeah, we'll see you a little bit later in April as well. That'll be good.
Lovely. Looking forward to it.
All right, mate. Take care.
Right. Thank you. Cheers. Good night.
And welcome back from that behemoth. We are very happy to have made it through. Cam, do we have anything we need to say or talk about?
We have always got something to say. That was so long that the period from the intro to the outro, Trent and Toya got married in that interval.
Fuck.
So, I'd like to give congratulations to one Trent Dennison and Toya from Awesome Wedding. The images looked amazing. There was a who's who of War Machine and Horde Australian community. Moob's house was there. So, yeah, no, it was looked very nice, and congratulations to them.
Have you seen how well-defined Moopsy's jaw is?
He is. He is a beast. He's a triple threat now.
I reckon he could cut cheese with that.
He's a sexy man. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I guess we should probably plug Nats. That's going to be in August. Still building the numbers?
Yeah, I believe so. I haven't had an update from our good friend Matty, but I will get that for the next one. We'll pump it up a bit more. You get a free stubby holder if you're one of the first 20 to sign up. Or, in fact, no, if you sign up pre early birds. And I think if you're in the first 20, you also get a chance of winning a limited edition mist. So we're all about giving. So, yeah, sign up now. Do it now.
Yeah, I think if you followed us on Twitter, you'd know that we're all about giving.
We are all about giving. We don't take much.
Oh, brilliant. Jesus. Brilliant. And
speaking
as ever,
of giving,
go, Cam, go. I don't want to interrupt your flow, my friend.
I know. I was going to go Big Daz from Nerdvana Games SA, who's our sponsor. He is always giving. I had a chat to him earlier before I got on a flight, and he actually has donated about 4 or 5 minis to our tournament this weekend. So he's a legend. Anytime you've got a chance or want some Guild Ball minis, look out for nirvanasa.com, I believe.
Yes. Daryl, you are a beautiful man.
So other than that, do we have anything else to talk about?
No. I think we've exhausted ourselves like a pair of windbags.
Yes, dude.
Yes. This one's taken a little bit longer than usual to come out, so we're just glad to have got through the constipation.
Yeah. I think, and this might be, that's probably a good point to say to people, look, realistically, we're a 2 to 3 week kind of podcast. We'd like to keep you on your toes, you know, keep in touch, hit us up, annoy us with content, but that's realistically how often we're going to come out.
Yes. And I'm already lining up the next one. I think it'll see a welcome return of an old favourite.
Ooh, I'm actually intrigued.
Well, I think I'll just leave you hanging.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, then, until that podcast, we'll catch you later.
What's going on, man?
Not too much. How are you guys?
You know.
Good.
About to re- record a podcast. It's always fun. The fuck is Tobias?
I don't know. Have you finished off your job? Did you hand in your resignation?
Yeah, but I got to work till Friday, and my evil boss comes back today from vacation. Today's the day. I want to survive.
Oh, no. Well, but you've handed it in. You're past the point of no return.
She hasn't been professional one day, so I don't expect it today either.
You need to wear a wire, man. You need to like get it all recorded. Oh, here, just speak it to my lapel.
Yeah, I don't know.
Man, you should just go to work with your cock out your pants. You know? Draw a little smiley face on the end.
Yeah. Well, the bad thing is it wouldn't surprise half the females there, you know? Jesus.
Oh, no, Jared's got his cock out again.
This is going to be a great podcast.
Well, I'm going to get so judged. Like, no, somebody will see me across the table now, and they'll think, I probably should go wash my hands afterwards. I don't really want to touch his models.
Yeah. So this bit will probably not go into the podcast.
I'm so bringing this up.
Unless I put it into, like, the, you know, the put it at the end or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even though I'm new to like tabletop wargaming, there are some necessities that I bring with me every time. One of it being hand sanitizer. You know?
Not messing around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking, man. If you drew a face on the end of your cock and put like a little bit of cotton wool on it, it would look like Falcor the Luck Dragon from Neverending Story.
Oh God.
Just something seriously wrong.
Clean talk though. You know, it's like. Slightly awkward. Like it might grow its own personality. And what do you do?
I don't know why I find that so funny.
Really?
Oh, shit.
You might say something like, take it easy on me down here. I've been taking a beating, you know? Can I get a break? Thanks.
That's not fire I'm breathing.
And if it is, I want to get the hell out of here.
If this doesn't go for your thoughts,
it's like chemical warfare. It's skill ball shit anyway.
Yeah. Why would we even bother talking about that?
Am I not supposed to whine about something? I mean, you know.